It's time for the Car Doctor on AM 950 WROL. Got a car question? Call us at 617-770-3030. That's 617-770-3030. Now, here's the Car Doctor, John Paul, on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston.
And good Saturday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston, or at 100.3 FM. Depends where you're listening, or maybe you're listening on the WROL app, or you're listening on TuneIn, or any one of those other places where you can listen to things. And, yes, I'm back. I took last Saturday off. Don't do that very often. I don't take a day off very often. But I had to because there was that was the only time the plane left, was to quarter of seven. So we went down to Florida for sort of a little bit more than the weekend. And the flight left at quarter of seven in the morning, so normally, I try to make my arrangements in such a way that I can be here or be someplace else and be able to do the show remotely. But I just couldn't do it last week, so I want to thank Craig Fitzgerald for filling in for me last week and talking about the with his buddy with the duck boats in Boston. It was all kind of interesting. So thanks to Craig and. Craig's been around a long time. Craig is also my editor at Best Ride, which is an online website. They handle a lot of the automotive content for different places, and you might hear him every once in a while late night on another radio station in the Boston area. Well, you know, have you ever wondered, you know, there's a lot of muscle cars from the 60s into the 70s, and certainly one of the most iconic ones, I think, is the Pontiac GTO. And with us on the phone is Tom Glatch. He is the he wrote a book, and actually wrote many books, actually, but it's called The Complete Book of the Pontiac GTO, Every Model Since 1964. Tom, good morning, and welcome to the Car Doctor program here in Boston.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Boston.
Well, thanks very much for joining us at 8:30 in the morning. You know, let's start with the book. I think the GTO is one of those cars that anybody who's kind of, especially grew up in light cars in the 60s, it was just in a lot of cases an unobtainable car for some people. But what made the GTO really special?
It's one of those cars that I think you don't have to be a Pontiac person or a GM person to appreciate. It's kind of like the 57 Thunderbird or the first Mustang or whatever. It's just maybe because it was the first, but in many ways it was the best. And it's just an truly iconic car. You hate to overuse that word iconic, but it really is.
Yeah, and it was one of those cars that would never have happened without John DeLorean, right?
John DeLorean unquestionably was probably the greatest automotive genius to come out of Detroit. He just understood the market, and whether it was the big Pontiacs or the smaller Pontiacs like the GTO, he just understood the market, and with really very little expense, was able to tweak the Tempest into this brilliant car.
Yeah, and what made the GTO the GTO was it was a powerful car, and I was talking with an old timer one day, and he said to me, you know, all these new cars 0 to 60 in 6 seconds, and you know, big horsepower. He said my GTO had that in the '60s.
That's exactly right. It paved the way. It wasn't the first mid-sized car that was fast. If you knew how to do it, you'd get a very fast Chrysler product at that time, a Dodge or a Plymouth, but they didn't have the style by any means of the GTO. He was able to tweak it and give it that distinctive look, and from that point on, the rest of Detroit tried to copy it.
Yeah, and you look at GM back then, and I think what really made GM GM, and again, I guess talking to some of the old timers, and I guess maybe I'm starting to fall into that category or already in that category as an old timer. But you could look at cars, and you could listen to cars, and you knew a Pontiac when it started up. You knew a GTO when it started up, and it sounded different than a Chevelle SS when it started up. It was a different car. And I think now where the cars are sort of blended together so much, they're designed in wind tunnels. They sort of look a lot alike in some cases. But the GTO, it was a Tempest of, some people say it was a glorified Tempest, but it was a lot more than that because of the way it looked, the way it sounded, and what it did, right?
Exactly. It was the combination of the pieces that really was the brilliance of the whole thing. And you're right about the sound. There's a distinctive GTO sound that even today when you hear it, you just go, yeah, that's a Pontiac. You know, the cars were probably 90% the same underneath between a Chevelle and an Oldsmobile and a Buick and a Pontiac, but that distinctive engine that was unique to Pontiac plus just the body panels. You could put those body panels probably on a Chevelle and turn it into a Tempest, but you just didn't do it. You just... That was the genius of the GM system. Simply was that they had these four cars that shared, maybe 90% of their components, and yet they were very distinctive. And of those, I mean, the Pontiac was super distinctive. And again, a lot of that was the brilliance of John DeLorean and the people that worked for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you look at how the GTO had kind of changed over the years, but. As you were looking from 1964 to the last generation Australian Holden GTO, as you were putting the book together, who was your audience you had in mind when, as you were assembling the book and getting some of the stories together?
Well, whenever I do a book for motor books, it's usually, there's got to be a dozen or more GTO books out there. So how do you do it different? And that's really the hardest part. And we just decided to celebrate the car the best we could, maybe tell some stories that hadn't been heard or just were not well known. And we always celebrate the car itself and how it impacts the popular culture rather than just the nuts and the bolts and the horsepower and things like that. And let's face it, the GTO impacted the popular culture like few vehicles ever did, even later on. So when we got into those later years, like 70, 71, 72, when cars were being criticized for slowing down and being pieces of junk, the GTOs really weren't. It's just that the media kind of ignored them, and there was this perception out there, but they were darn good cars. So, we tried to do whatever we could, just a little bit different. And because Kelly and I photographed the cars as well as wrote about them, we could put them in interesting situations, photograph some beautiful cars, tell some stories about the current owners and things like that.
Yeah, that's what's really interesting, I think, sets your books aside is the owner profiles. The little vignettes you have of some of the cars that are in there and some of the people that own them, and it gives you a connection.
Yeah, these cars, these people are not just car collectors. They're rabid GTO fanatics. I don't know how else to put it. And they just, some of these cars were purchased in the, early 70s, mid-70s, as second owner used cars, got them cheap, still own them. And they still own them because they became part of their family. Their kids grew up in them. They drove them in the snow. On a day like today, it's more than just a car. It's hard for some people to understand that, but it's more than just a car, and that's what we tried to celebrate also is with these stories, these family heirlooms, basically.
Mm. Yeah, every time I hear about the future and they say that, people aren't going to own cars and there's not going to be any relationship with cars, I think of people that own cars like whether it's a GTO or a Volkswagen Beetle for that matter, and it becomes a part of their family, and they name it, they they take care of it. They nurture it. They try to keep it going. And I keep thinking of, you know, all these super smart people who say, you know, the future says that people aren't going to own cars. They're just going to, you know, one, you know, four families are going to share one car. And I'm like, I don't know. You know, maybe someplace in the country, but I don't see that happening in a part of the country that, first off, needs vehicles, but also has kind of grown up with a love for cars, whether it's class, like I said, a classic car like this, or just a minivan that's part of the family that, you know, has taken people back and forth to school for 5 years. I
completely agree. Absolutely.
Yep.
You know, there's and I don't think it's just my generation or, you know, Generation X or whoever. I think even today that's the case. You're seeing people buying cars out of love, not just plain old transportation. And you're right, maybe if you live in Manhattan or downtown Boston or something, and a car has a different purpose than it does if you're in the suburbs or in a small town, that might be the case, but I can't see the whole industry turning to that shared model at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah, I don't see it either. And, you know, back to your book, one of the things, and I'm not a big reader, so your book appeals to me because there's lots of pictures.
That's part of it. We try to make it easy reading to begin with. I've been writing for magazines for 35 years. And while a magazine audience is a little bit different than a book audience, we try to keep it light. We try to keep it interesting. And as always, we try to tell stories that are just different. And, you know, this was just, it was a fun book, but it was a rush job. We had 2 months to photograph the cars. We shot the first one Labor Day weekend, and our weather in the Midwest here is very similar to Boston.
Mm-hmm.
By early November, you're done. And we had photographed 25 cars in 2 months, and then we had 3.5 months to write the book. And so, yeah, we had to keep it light, keep it simple, but keep it interesting.
Yeah.
We tell some interesting stories about, for example, young men coming back from Vietnam, and the hope of owning a car like a GTO was what kept them going through this horror of the Vietnam War.
Mm.
And, you know, people like Ralph Nader would never understand that.
Although I had Ralph Nader on my show years and years ago, and talking about his Corvair book, Unsafe at Any Speed, and he said to me, well, it's a nice car to look at, but I don't think I'd want to own one. So at least he appreciated what the Corvair looked like.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I find that very interesting.
Yeah.
He and Jill Claybrook and those sorts of people, they look at a car as transportation, and of course it needs to be safe, it needs to be, and cars at that time weren't necessarily all that great. I understand that.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
they also have a meaning to people. As you say, these family heirlooms, these parts of families, it's not transportation. It's well beyond that.
Yeah. Was there anything, as you were doing your research and as you were, you know, talking to people, is there one or two stories? I mean, the Vietnam story is a great one, but any other stories that really jumped out at you, that, you know, surprised you or you know, shocked you for that matter about the cars or their owners?
A couple of things was just the people that owned the cars. If you read the first chapter about the 64 GTOs, here's a husband and wife. They're in their mid to late 70s. They've owned GTOs since, I think, the early 80s. And they both owned GTOs, 64 GTOs, before they met each other.
Wow.
So exactly. So here's a gal banging the gears on a turquoise 64 GTO. And she eventually meets her husband, Dick, and he has a 64 GTO. And, I mean, what a great couple. And they still drive these cars all over the country, even, you know, in their mid or upper 70s. And then, well, I got to say, just to talk to Bob Lutz, who to me is the other legendary car guy out of Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
Was just a tremendous honor. He was very open, very honest. Talked about how he brought the GTO back for those last 3 years in 2004 to 2006. And here's a guy that I've admired liberally for the past 30 years in what he's done in the auto industry. And he's just very open, very honest, told some really interesting background stories, and then turned around and wrote the foreword to the book. And I just can't thank him enough. It really sealed the deal on this thing.
No, he's a certainly pretty outspoken guy, and he would, you know, if you asked him a question and or made a comment, he would tell you if you were full of crap, that's for sure.
Oh, no question. That's what I like about him, is he's got no filter. And,
yep.
And you know, our books don't either. If somebody really did something, you know, stupid in the past, and the gentleman that took over Pontiac from DeLorean went out of his way to destroy the GTO, or at least to destroy it as DeLorean's car. I guess
he
wanted to make it his own. Or then he focused on the Firebird and the Trans Am, which was not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he ignored this huge base of GTO fans in the process. And who in their right mind does this? But James McDonald did exactly that, and then his successors were almost as bad. So I, you know, as much as the cars were good, and they really were still very good cars, especially in the light of the era of the early 70s, the people behind the scenes just lost that vision of what the car should be.
Yeah. No, it is a car that when people think about it and they think about the various models of the car and they think about everything that's involved with the GTO, I think it makes it interesting. And you know, and like you said, Bob Lutz is a really interesting guy. I remember talking to him somewhere and I said, "What's your first, you know, how'd you get involved? What did you like about cars?" And he said to me, I was in our housekeeper's arms looking out a second floor window, and I saw my father come home, and I think it was like in a, I don't know, a Cadillac or something. And he said, "You know, I remember being a little kid in my housekeeper's arms looking down at the car thinking, There's something special about the automobile industry." And I kind of said to myself, "Well, you certainly started off life interesting." I guess his father was a Swiss banker or something.
Yes, so, he was. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I said, and I remember saying to him, "So, what do you do for fun?" He said, "You know, fly my Chinese jet or something." So
it's a Czech Republic jet. He's 86 years old. He's the oldest licensed fighter pilot in the world. And, one of the things he told me in my interview was, "Don't ever say you're too old to do something. It's all in your head."
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't have a private jet. So
no, I don't either.
Yeah.
But you're not too old to fly one.
Apparently that's the case. The book is a complete book of Pontiac GTO. We're talking with the author, Tom Glatch. Every model since 1964. There, you know, with all cars, there's always a couple of questionable models in there. You know, you look at the Ford Mustang, and even Charlie's Angels couldn't make the Mustang II a nice car.
Well, no, but then again, it was a Pinto.
Yeah, exactly.
What can you do? You know.
Was there a model year that's sort of the orphan year of the GTO that people didn't care for
the Nova based 74.
Yeah,
and we had a beautiful example to photograph. The car was a second owner car. It was bought new in Green Bay, Wisconsin. The second owner is in Green Bay, Wisconsin. It's lived its whole life in Green Bay in the shadow of. Sorry, I'll have to say it, Lambeau Field.
Mm, that's all right. That's okay.
Yeah, you know, it's frozen tundra. And it's a gorgeous car. And, again, with very little money, they turned it into, you know, instead of a Pontiac Ventura, which is mm-hmm. really a glorified Nova, they turned it into a GTO. And if you look at the context of 1974, with all of the pollution regulations coming on, the safety regulations coming on, the 10-mile-an-hour bumpers and all those things, plus the Arab oil embargo and the fuel costs had literally doubled overnight, it was a pretty good car.
Hmm.
And what people don't maybe realize is that GM fully intended to continue the car the next year, even though there was a a major redesign of the Nova. There were prototypes that were built. They were going to continue the GTO and just decided to kill it. Not sure why. It seemed like there was still a market for an inexpensive, fun car.
Oh, yeah.
And 200 horsepower is nothing spectacular, but it was a fun car.
Yeah, well, it was 200 horsepower in the age when the Corvette was 200 horsepower.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. No, in the news release that came with your book, there's a line that says, "A complete book of the Pontiac GTO is the first and last word on the first and best Motor City muscle car from the golden age of high performance." Do you see a time when cars from this era will be called the golden age of high performance cars?
Absolutely.
Yeah, do you think as we look back, whether we look at Vipers or Hellcats or you know, 650 horsepower Corvettes, and we'll say this is the new golden age?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. These are the good old days, to paraphrase a song. You know, if you look at the current Camaro, the current Mustang, and even the Challengers and Chargers, which are, you know, that platform is 12 years old, 13 years old, but they keep refining it, how you can pack 740 horsepower into a vehicle like that is just unbelievable.
Mm.
And, you know, and then you get a tuner like Callaway or somebody like that and just make it even crazier. This is a pretty special time. And savor it, because who knows how long it's going to last.
Yeah, you're right. You know, as things change, and whether it's regulation or the economy, or who knows what's happened, you have to look at these cars and appreciate them. And in fact, locally here in New England is the Newport Car Museum. It's actually, oddly enough, in Bristol, Rhode Island. But the owner of that museum has about 70 cars, and they're not old cars. Some are very old cars, but they're cars that truly kind of appreciate this new modern era, as well as some of the cars from the 60s and 70s and 50s, for that matter. And you look at that and you go, you know, we live in a pretty special time.
Yeah, we really do. I mean, you think about it, even a semi-luxury muscle car from the 60s, like the GTO, it was not a stripped-down car at all. It was nice, a lot of features. Compare it to today, but the inflammation systems and the leather interiors and the, you know, 100-watt sound systems and everything else. And then you got an engine that's twice the horsepower of those cars back then, and a chassis that can handle it, and massive brakes and everything else.
Yep.
You go, wow, this is pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at the cars today, and if you put, I'm kind of making up the number because I did it once, kind of in theory, a bunch of years ago. You could put 75 high performance Mustangs sitting in a parking lot and let them idle, and they put out less air pollution than one 1966 Mustang did. So
that's exactly right.
Yeah, so you have all this performance, you have all this handling, and they are so much more efficient cars than they were back then, which really makes it special. Your book, The Complete Book of the Pontiac GTO, every model since 1964, where can people get it?
Just about anywhere. It's on Amazon. It's on Barnes & Noble. In fact, it's 10% off on Barnes & Noble this weekend. But you can just, a local bookstore, independent bookstore, can order it too, and you know, maybe that's the best way to go.
Yeah. No, and what do you got in the works for another book?
Nothing at the moment.
Nothing?
We did 4 books in 3 years. That's really intense.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And it's nice to have a little bit of a break. Sometime next year we'll start another project, but I really don't know what that is. It's always a collaboration between Motor Books and us, and at this point we're not really sure.
Yeah. Do you have anything special in your garage?
Not really.
Not really?
I'm not really a car collector. I'm not a kind of person that enjoys, you know, working on cars all that much. But I love them.
Yep.
I've had a couple in the past, but for the most part, I'd rather, you know, photograph somebody else's treasure, write about it, enjoy their company, and trust me, car people are some of the best people around.
Absolutely.
And do it that way.
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking some time out of your Saturday morning and joining us up here in Boston. You're out in Wisconsin?
In the Milwaukee area, yeah.
Milwaukee, yep. Yeah.
But been to Boston once and left a big piece of our heart there. It's just an incredible city.
Well, yesterday we got about 8 inches of snow.
So. I know you did. Yeah. I know. So we get lake effect, you get nor'easter. So.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, thanks again for taking some time out of your Saturday, and enjoy the rest of the weekend.
Thank you, John.
All right, take care. Bye bye. That was Tom Glatch, the person who put together the complete book of the Pontiac GTO, every model since 1964. He's also written other books about Corvette, Mustang, muscle car. He's written for Mopar magazine. He's done a lot of things. His wife Kelly is the photographer of all his books, which even makes it a little bit more special. Why don't we take a break, pay some bills? We're also going to do a trivia question and give away some tickets to the Boston Auto Show. If I say it really fast, Dennis won't get mad. And the trivia prize will be the book, which, by the way, should you know, this book is $45. So it's a really good prize. It's a little bit of a dicey answer to this, but we'll do our best. We'll be right back. Car wash,
yeah. Work and work. Well, those cars never seem to stop coming.
Work and work.
Keep those bags and machines humming.
Work and work.
Round, round, get around. I get around. Yeah, get around. Round, round, I get around.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Program on AM950 WROL 100.3 FM or any place else. WROL app. Okay, we'll start with the ticket giveaway first. And how can we do this? We'll give away three pairs of tickets. The dentist's got to write down three names, three addresses. It's complicated, I know. And all you have to do is call 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030, and you can get a pair of tickets to the Boston Auto Show, or if you want RV tickets, you can get those too, because the RV show is kind of the same weekend, starts a day later. So say to Dennis, can I get the RV and the auto show tickets? And I will send out a pair of each. So let's see. Do we have them all?
We have three people already. I just haven't taken their names yet,
right.
So you can stop calling.
All right. Whatever Dennis just said. So do that. So all those things. We have our winners. Fast people. Fast people are good. Pushing the buttons. Dialing. I appreciate it all. There was a. I was looking for the actual email someone sent me. And they had a problem with their car. It really wasn't a problem with their car. It was more of a problem with their understanding of their car, I guess. They had these lights built into their side view mirrors, and it was a Chevy pickup truck. And they went to their dealer and said to the dealer, What are these lights built into the pickup truck? And the dealer said, "Well, they're a backup light, but we put them on every car, and you don't have that option, so you can't use them." And he said, "Well, I'd like to have these extra backup lights on my side view mirrors because I pull a trailer and it'd be handy to have." And the dealer said, "Well, your car doesn't have that. It just has the mirrors, but it doesn't have that." So he said, which was kind of odd that the dealer actually said that. And I did a little bit of research, and he says to me, I said, "Well, no, they are backup lights, but they only work when you put the light for the bed on. So there's a white light, looks like a dome light, mounted on the back window, and it turns the bed light on. When the bed light goes on, it it lets the it lets the backup lights in the mirror come on. Well, apparently he never used his bed light. And he writes me back and he says, "You're a genius." Well, no, I'm not a genius. I just happened to look it up on the internet and looked around a little bit and found it. And so not a genius, but somebody who just did a little bit of research. But it was just odd to me that the dealer wasn't able to come up with an answer. You would think that somebody there would have said, "Oh, yeah, that's how it works. It's that simple." But, If you own a Ford Focus, chances are it's going to get a recall. Ford Motor Company is recalling 1.46 million Ford Focus cars in North America to fix a defect that could lead to stalling. The recall affects 2012 to 2018 model year Focus with the 2-liter regular gasoline engine and the 2-liter turbocharged gasoline engine. Ford warned customers they should keep their fuel tanks at least half full until the cars are fixed. The issue stems from a defective canister purge valve that could become stuck in the open position, causing a deformation of the fuel tank. That doesn't sound good. Sounds Pinto-ish. In certain instances, the defect could cause the Focus to stall, then not restart, or have difficulty restarting. Car owners may notice an indicator light or a fuel gauge delivering inaccurate levels. The recall includes about 1.28 million cars in the U.S., 136,000 in Canada, and about 50,000 in Mexico. The company said it hasn't identified any crashes connected to the defect. Ford dealers repair the cars for free. Like all recalls, technicians will reprogram the powertrain control module with new software and replace various parts, including the canister purge valve, if necessary. Customers will be notified directly if they are affected. Yes?
We're all done now.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
All right.
We got everything we need.
All right. In fact, our Volkswagen got a recall, and it has to do with, it's just a software fix, and it said you may notice an occasional check engine light that comes on, and I haven't, although being somewhat less trusting sometimes, I kind of wonder if they do something to it, is the good gas mileage going to change? Because right now, our little Volkswagen Beetle gets... the gasoline and turbocharged gasoline engine gets about anywhere between 35 and almost 40 miles per gallon on the highway if you drive it reasonably, and seems to work well.
Can I go bring back the when you were talking to the gentleman about the GTOs and how the cars today are really comfortable? We were talking about that last week with the two guest hosts, and saying that I'm one that I used to think that I used to be nostalgic over like the old muscle cars and stuff like that. But then as I've gotten older, I like the new muscle cars because they're way more comfortable.
they are all of that. Now, Craig Fitzgerald, you have to remember Craig Fitzgerald, who I believe just turned 50 this year.
Okay.
When he was 30, he was 70. And I don't know how old he is now, but he's a, He loves, you know, 50s, 60s cars. If he had his way, I think he'd drive a Vista Cruiser station wagon. He has an old Blazer that he bought from another friend of ours, Glenn Gould, and it's a V8 with a manual transmission. He painted it with a roller.
What?
Painted it with a roller. But he did some research, and he found out that you take regular automotive paint, you thin it down really thin, and you paint it with a roller, and then you do a lot of sanding, and it actually came out really, really good.
That's too much work.
It was a lot of work. But then he also put new cylinder heads on it, a different intake manifold on it. Another friend of ours, Brian Loans, who's been on this show, who is he runs the website Bang Shift. He's also the host of Put Up or Shut Up on Velocity, one of the co-hosts, and now he is an NHRA for Fox Motorsports announcer, I think.
Okay,
so he got he's
oh, I remember talking to him.
He's on TV a lot now, so. But anyway, so he gave Craig the cylinder heads and other stuff. So it turned into a really interesting car. If you have a question about your car, why don't you give us a call at 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030, and we will try our best to answer it. I mentioned the Newport Auto Show. Newport Auto Museum.
Auto Museum, yeah.
This Friday, Black Friday, right?
Next Friday.
Yeah, no, this is coming Friday.
Is Thanksgiving this Thursday?
Yeah, I'm only working 3 days this week. Yay!
Well, on Black Friday, if you're a AAA member, you can go down to the Newport Museum and there's a special discount rate for AAA members on that day. Go on their website. It'll explain it all.
That might be something I might do.
Yeah.
Maybe after I get, oh my God, I can't believe I'm saying it, after I get cable reinstalled.
Cable? Yeah, you Mr. Cable Cutter? Or going back. You're going back to the dark side, huh?
They gave me a deal. When I added it all up, it was a little bit more than what I'm paying now. But the issue that I've been
having...
The issue that I was having with... and I love... I will forever love PlayStation View. But I noticed it last season and this season when I watch hockey games in particular... It skips an awful lot. So, it'll freeze, and then all of a sudden it'll jump, and then, a minute will pass or something like that. And so that's
If you're watching baseball, that wouldn't be a problem.
No, baseball's not a problem. Yeah. Basketball tends to be a little bit of a problem. Football's not a problem. Most TV shows aren't a problem, but I like my Celtics, and I like my Bruins, and I'm not frustrated with the streaming services at all. I honestly think that it's the cable company that might be slowing down the speed per se. But
they would never do that.
But I digress. So, I got a deal where I'm locked in for 2 years at a rate. And I already know that the fees and all that stuff change everything. But even with the fees and all that... it's good for 2 years, and then in 2 years there'll be hopefully 5G, so then I can totally cut the cord and not have to deal with them anymore.
And because you have cable now, you can watch Velocity.
I don't have the speed network on PlayStation, but we have Velocity.
Velocity. Anyway, so enough about cable.
Yes,
because
it's not that kind of show.
All it does is aggravate me too. When I was down in Florida, I rented a car through Dollar Rent-A-Car, and it was a Jeep, and it had push-button start. And Dennis noted earlier that he just found out that his Nissan with push-button start actually has a little key built into the key fob that he never really realized it was there before.
Again, I thought it was the release for, if the battery dies.
Yeah. Well, it is, sort of. If the battery dies, you can use a little key, take off the little key cover, get in, and then... generally, sometimes there's a place you can put the key inside to actually start it. Other times, if you just take the key fob and hold it next to a little spot, there's a little spot somewhere on the car that says, even if the battery's dead, hold the key fob right here, and you'll get one or two more starts out of it to get it going. So it won't have enough battery life in the key fob to unlock the doors, but it'll have enough to energize. And there's a spot somewhere. It'll say, either stick the key here, hold the key here, do something... This little indicator where you can do it.
I'll have to look when it's not below zero out.
Yeah, so in the spring. although it's supposed to be okay above zero tomorrow. But anyway, so and this new Jeep I had, I rented through Dollar Rent-A-Car. And all the car companies' rental cars are kind of all owned by the same one. But Dollar was the cheapest, being frugal like I am. And the most economical Dollar car was a mid-sized car. And I went over to the counter and I said, I rented through AAA and there's some advantages of that. The second driver can be put on for free, so there's no extra cost. I opted to buy the fuel ahead of time because you buy it at a fairly reasonable rate. And my plan was to bring the car back on fumes. I almost did, so I was able to do that. But this so I went up, and the guy says to me, oh, by the way, we're a AAA member. We do a free upgrade, so we upgrade you to a full-size car. I walked over to the full-size cars. There wasn't any. So I walked back to the window and said, there's no full-size cars left. And they said, oh, just grab a mid-size SUV. So I was like, oh, man, that's okay, too. Yes. So the mid-size SUV, they didn't have any. But one came right out of the wash rack, and it had 600 miles on it. And all those extras that you pay for, navigation, satellite radio, this car had it all. Or it at least had satellite radio and navigation through Apple CarPlay. So it made life pretty nice to deal with. And I had to do some work to the little tin shack down in Florida. So it was nice to be able to go to the local Lowe's and fill it all up with stuff. And the when I got the car, and where the story's going is push button start. I started the car, drove away. Stopped it. Well, you can't do any renovations or any work on anything without going to Harbor Freight first. So I stopped at the new brand new Harbor Freight store and bought one of those little giant knockoff ladders for like $100, and that worked out well because I needed a ladder. And even though all my neighbors offered to lend me ladders, it's nice to have your own. So I had the ladder. Went and did the work. I went to start the car, and it didn't start. I'm like, what the? Why didn't the car start? And I tried using the key and got it to lock and unlock, and then finally started. And then when I stopped at Lowe's, same problem. Wouldn't start. And come to find out, it was a problem with the push-button switch for the starter, because if I really leaned on the push button to the point where I thought I was going to break it, started right up. And after doing that two or three times, the problem solved itself and never came back. But so sometimes you think something is one problem and it turns out to be something else. And I think it was just, who knows, it's a rental car. So even though it's a brand new rental car, it was still a rental car. Our phone number is 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Let's go to line three. Let's talk to Jim. Jim, good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good.
That's good. I have a question about, my daughter has a Venza.
Okay.
And she's been having, I think I said 2014.
Yep.
Or 15. And what happens is she'll be driving down the road and it'll just cut out. And I've talked to some people about it, some, you know, advanced auto electric mm-hmm. people, and they said, well, the only way we can fix this is if it's happening when it's here. And I said, well, it's intermittent, and it seems to happen more when it's raining, when there's a lot of high moisture content in the air. So I was just, it sounds to me like it's an electrical problem that we're never going to be able to find. But I thought I'd check with you before we junk this thing.
Well, I wouldn't do that. It's, you know,
it's been in and out of the dealership a bunch of times, and they can't find. They just, you know, it hasn't solved the problem at all. So I don't know if it's electrical or if it's, you know, maybe a throttle positioning sensor or something like that. But I just wanted to get your opinion. Maybe you know something that's a recurring thing that for Ventus that we don't know about.
No, I mean, there's nothing that I know about that would be related to that. Although you say it cuts out, does it ever really stall, or does it just feel like there's nothing on the gas pedal?
You know what? I'm not sure 100%,
okay,
because it's not my car, it's
yep.
my daughter's, but yeah, I'm not. I couldn't tell you for sure.
Mm.
I'd have to check with her.
Mm.
But I don't think it ever stops.
Yeah,
running completely. I think it just like cuts out and she's left.
Yeah,
in the middle of the road with and can't go anywhere.
Yeah, I guess the first thing I would want to do is, and the dealer I would have thought would have maybe done this is to say, let's make sure all of the software is up to date in the car. So make sure that there's, you know, if there are any computer upgrades that can be done. Let's make sure they're all done. And sometimes they don't like to do that if they don't see a problem, but it makes sense to go in and look and see whether there is some sort of a computer update that may solve an intermittent problem. That's one way to go. The second thing is the symptom you described, and you mentioned throttle position. It almost sounds like an electronic throttle problem because there is no connection between the gas pedal and the throttle body. It's all electronic, and it almost makes me wonder if there's a problem with that, we'll call it the gas pedal switch for want of a better word. And, you know, maybe there's an intermittent issue in there. And the only way to really check that is they have to wire into it directly and slowly apply the throttle and see if there's any, they'll watch it and see if there's literally any like holes in the graph that they're watching and say, oh yeah, right at this point, It's almost like nothing happens. The gas pedal goes to zero, and that could indicate a problem. But the dealer in this case is probably the best place to go, because if anybody's going to be able to see an issue with it, they're going to see more problems than anybody else would with the car. But there's nothing I know of, and there's no technical service bulletin that specifically addresses anything even close to that.
Okay. So when you said the gas pedal switch,
yeah,
do they jump to the switch?
No, the gas pedal's almost like a, you know, it's like a rheostat. So it's sort of like a dimmer switch on a light switch. So when you press on it, and if there's an issue with that you get to a certain point and all of a sudden there's a lack of connection in there, it will intermittently feel like it just doesn't work anymore. But as far as I know, at least for, you know, 2014, I haven't seen anything that could indicate a problem with that. Do you know, is it the four cylinder or six cylinder?
I think it's a six.
Six, yeah. But as far as I know, Toyota has not issued any kind of technical bulletin. They have issued a couple of things for emissions, but nothing that indicates a problem. But still, I'd want to go back to the dealer and ask the dealer, is there any type of software update that maybe needs to be done that could possibly address this problem? And they have a lot better listing of that information than anybody else does. And maybe there is something there that affects a limited amount of cars, and they can do a computer refresh the computer, and it may solve the problem. But that information is available, but it's available kind of on a limited basis. So I would go back and ask them that and see if there's something they can.
So it would obviously have to be a Toyota dealership. Not the place we bought it.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't have to be the place you bought it, but should, you know, unless this car's got a million miles on it, I would think if it's a 15, I would think a lot of it's still under warranty.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
All right. Good luck.
Appreciate your help.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's go over to line four to Tom. Tom. Tom, is that you?
Yeah, hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Hey, John, buying tires, it's kind of a adventure sometimes. I was wondering if you could give, it's too late, they already bought them, but I've been through this before when you go and you pay for the tires and stuff, and I want to give you all these add-ons. What is necessary? They told me, it's one of the major retailers, everybody's heard of, I don't mention the name, rear alignment? What's that all about?
Well, years...
No, alignment, yeah.
Just alignment, yeah. Well, years ago, we just aligned the front wheels. And the rear wheels just sort of followed the back of the car.
Yeah.
And then, with the exception of exotic cars, like, you know, Ferraris and things. In fact, one of the first tire shops I ever worked at, we had an alignment machine. And there was a Ferrari dealership down the street in Cohasset who didn't have an alignment machine, and they would bring their Ferraris to our shop, and we would back the car onto the machine to do the rear alignment because there wasn't even four-wheel alignment machines back then. There was that's how much of a antique I am, I guess. So, so what happened was as cars started to have independent suspension, there started to be a point where you could do rear-wheel alignment. And that was setting the same angles that made sure the tires were, in essence, straight up and down and followed the front of the car the way it was supposed to. And in a lot of cases, there's not a lot of rear wheel adjustment, but still sometimes it can be out of adjustment. I brought my car back to the dealer for an oil change, and I said, by the way, the steering wheel's a little bit off-centered, and could you check the alignment? And I got this big printout back about how they checked the alignment, and I'm pretty sure they didn't. They may have not done anything actually, but but they said they did. They said, oh yeah, the rear alignment was way off, and I'm like, I don't really think it was, but But having the rear wheel alignment at least checked and sometimes adjusted makes a lot of sense.
Okay, so it's something you would do if you were buying tires.
Yeah.
But there's, of course, an extra charge.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you're going to spend
a... I said, now, wait a minute. He says, well, you know, you have a warranty on these tires, and the company may not honor the warranty if they discover that they're even, you know, out of alignment.
Well, I mean, and that's like, if you, for instance, and depending on the warranty, if it's a mileage warranty or just a defect warranty, if the tires, you know, if the tires are supposed to go 60,000 miles, and they only go 30,000 miles because the alignment is way out of whack, and they look at the tires and they're all worn on one side or they're all feathered or whatever the case is, they're going to say, well, look, you know, we can't warranty this tire because you didn't do the alignment. You know, the alignment was obviously off on it, so you should.
All right.
Yeah, so.
So it's not, they're not trying to give you.
No. Now, on the other hand, if they said to you, do you want to buy the tire insurance? Do you want to buy the tire rotation insurance? Those are things you have to think about and decide whether, you know, over my lifetime, have I hit a bunch of potholes and blown out tires? Then maybe you want to buy it or you don't, you know. So
it's one of the major retailers, and they offer that free, supposedly. Free rotation. Free tire repair and this and that. And they claim they offer, they give you all these things along with the tires, but you know it can be a mystery. The metal valves or the rubber valves or whatever the hell, you know, they offer you that too, whatever that means, and so forth. And so I was just wondering what you thought about that.
I'm always leery of add-ons and being both a kind of a consumer advocate and cheap. When I walk up to the register and buy a, you know, I don't know, a cordless drill for $50 you know, they say, oh, do you want to buy the warranty for $12? I'm like, No, you know, well, it covers a year. And I'm like, well, if this thing doesn't last a year, I'll be pretty disappointed in it. And I think if I added up all the money I didn't spend in warranty packages, you know, if I took that money, I could probably go on vacation with it.
But these guys are professionals, and you can't help get the feeling that you're being fleeced. You know, they know what you want before you get there. They know how to talk to you and so forth. So that's what's a little bit.
You know, I hate to say it, but sometimes I feel like that. You know, the last time I went to the doctors, and they said to me, "Well, tell me what hurts." And you know, it's like, "Well, my head hurts, my knee hurts, my shoulder hurts, whatever." And it's like, "Well, we need to get you this specialist for this and this specialist for that." Yeah. And I'm like, all this is know, I don't. And I think I'm just getting old, you know?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah. And real quick story, a car show this summer, went to one in here in Concord, and the Motorheads or something. And the cars are all lined up, and speed rods and everything beautiful, you know how they are with the old models and stuff. And on the end was a Model 3 Tesla.
Oh, okay.
And he had his hood up. And I don't know if he's trying to be funny or not, he wasn't there.
Yeah.
But a beautiful car, red car and stuff. And you know, you go and look at all these cars. And I asked myself, you know, all of a sudden it dawned on me, is this the future of car shows? Because there's nothing there under the hood. And, you know, you look inside to expect to see some beautiful instruments, and there's nothing, of course, there. And
there's a giant iPad. Yeah.
So is this the future of car shows or what?
You know?
electric.
No, but there is, and I wish I could get this guy on the show, but he, I guess he doesn't like me. There's a guy on YouTube called Rick Rebuilds, and he actually rebuilds junk Teslas. He works in the financial district in Boston, and there was a video where he was at an electric car show, and someone took a drivetrain out of a Tesla and put it in an Audi, and it was a really impressive car when it was done, because the thing was really, really fast. And you kind of look at it and go, you know, this might be the future of car shows, where people take, you know, a high performance electric drivetrain out of a car and put it in a completely different car. And when you do that, you're like, maybe there is, you know, maybe there is something, because the essence of it's still the same. Big fat tires, really fast, and junkyard engineering.
Beautiful cars on the outside. Yep. Teslas, outstanding designs and stuff.
Yep.
But there's nothing to see, you know, along with after looking at these beautiful engines under the hood of these cars and stuff.
No, they're...
And so,
you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. All right, thanks, John.
All right, take care.
Take care.
Yep. Bye-bye. We need to take another break. My name's John Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program. You're listening on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston. We'll be right back.
Song in there, it pops up every now and then.
Okay, all right.
She's real fast. There is a GTO song.
All right, I believe it. Okay, all right. All right, we'll take a couple calls, and then we'll do a little bit of trivia, and we'll see how bad my trivia question is, because it's a little questionable here. But let's go to line one. Let's talk to Tom in Weymouth. Tom.
Yes,
there you are.
I'm number two. I was number two. I can't.
No, you're number one. You're number one in our life here. So.
Oh, I can't make it to number one. John, the problem I have is a carburetor from the 70s. It's an old motor craft.
Okay.
I called you last year. I rebuilt it because I was having a problem. The float bowl wasn't holding fuel.
Okay.
So I got a rebuild kit, and at the time, I think what kind of fixed it, was the power valve, which is on the bottom.
Yep.
On the very bottom, that was kind of gone and leaking. So right now, it's still leaking down very slow, but I cannot see any visual signs of fuel. It's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You usually could wipe something, a trace. I put paper underneath it, filled up the float bowl, I have it apart. And down at the bottom of the carburetor, you have the power valve. You can see where it goes in. But there's also the two main jets.
Mm-hmm.
It appears to be... It stops leaking at the main jets because they're a little bit higher than the power valve. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it appears it's somewhere, I would think, in the jetways. Where does that system... Yeah, go ahead.
Now, the where the jets are, there's little needles that sit inside the jets, right?
Right.
Now...
No, the way the jets come out and at the bottom is just little brass tubes.
Oh, okay.
Draw it in.
Okay. And how much, and is it the issue that when the carburetor's on the car, it's hard to start? It cranks and cranks and cranks and cranks? Or does it start flooded?
No, what's happening is, the actual float bowl is draining down, so it won't start. I have to prime it. But the issue, it's getting into the crankcase. I don't use it. It's not a problem. It's my old CJ5.
Okay.
It's a V8. It's a two-barrel carburetor. Yeah. And... You know, you don't use it, so you let it sit. And then I noticed that the oil was thinning out, because I could tell by my... Mm-hmm. I sat up one day, and the oil pressure was, like, gone. I said, what the heck's going on? So I said, smells like gas, changed the oil, and so forth. Like I said, it was the original problem, seemed to be the power valve. That's why I was trying to figure out the way that the gas goes through the jets. I can see where it would fill up where it comes up. It's kind of hard to explain where it would go up into the into where it sprays into the carburetor. Have you ever heard of, could there be, or I guess could be anything, a slight crack or something, or it's just,
I
put a piece of paper under it, and I can smell it on the paper, but I can't, you know, lift it up every day.
I've seen carburetor bowls actually get porous, and the gas actually seeps through the bowl of the carburetor, so I suppose anything's possible.
But usually you would see it settling there,
you would see something.
And I did it.
I'm wondering whether you have more than one problem going on here. I wonder if you have a carburetor problem, that there's a little bit of, you know, if the float bowl is draining down, and you know, how much fuel is there in the float bowl? You know, there's not a lot.
Yeah, right.
You know, so is an ounce or two of gasoline that over time drips into the crankcase going to be enough where it dilutes the oil and it smells like gas? Maybe, but not. That's not a lot of gasoline. I'm wondering if you need a fuel pump.
Okay, why is that?
Because if the diaphragm in the fuel pump is going bad, and it's getting a little bit porous, and the fuel pump's mounted on the side of the engine.
Okay.
I wonder if you're actually pumping some fuel into the crankcase.
Okay. That's a good point, because I've had that all apart.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. All right. I see what you're saying. Right. Yeah, because it goes right into the side of the crankcase.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
A good point.
All right.
We'll go after that. I think that's one of them.
You know, short of going out and trying to find a replacement, you know, and everybody makes them. Holley makes a replacement two barrel for that style manifold.
Right.
And you could go up and buy one, and I'm sure there's used ones out there and so forth.
This is the Frugal Show, John.
Yeah, I know. I understand.
If it was a driver, I would, but if he gets no three times.
It's funny. In today's Boston Globe, somebody wrote in, they wrote in a couple weeks ago, but when I wrote the column about putting a plow on a little CJ with the, I don't know, a four-cylinder engine, and wanted to know if I thought it was, you know, something they could do. And I said, yeah, they've been putting plows on Jeeps for, you know, since time began.
Never.
And then somebody sent me a picture of a Chevy Love truck. One of those horrible Chevy Loves that was really an Isuzu.
Right.
And they actually have a bucket off a, I think it's a Sears lawn tractor, mounted to the front of it. And they're still using the original engine, and they're like, "Yeah, I'll one up you on this Jeep." So, people are frugal. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's right. Yeah. Well, cheap. The real word is right.
Yeah. You know. As Craig Fitzgerald, who was here last week for me, in my Best Ride column, he edits it, so I give him the information. He kind of adds the top to it, and he says, and he has referred to me as legendary cheapskate, John Paul. So,
well, I'm right behind you. It's an honor, John.
All right.
Take care.
All right. Thank you. Take care. Bye bye.
Right.
Bye-bye. All right. Let's do a little trivia. Rick, stay right there. I know you're right there, but stay right there. So I stole this from someplace, and I will readily admit it. And it says it's back to school time, so why not quiz our clients with some trivia? I don't know where this came from. We asked our Facebook followers which American car has the model called the Judge. And we know from talking with Tom Klatch that the Judge was a model of the GTO. The real question was, the 1968 GTO was named the Judge after what popular skit, and who made it famous? Does that make any sense at all?
You're asking what the car, why the car was called the Judge.
The Judge, yeah.
What was the skit?
What was the skit? And I'll give you a little hint. It was on Rowan and Martin's Laughing. So you have to be of a certain age.
Oh, my goodness.
How's that? So what was the skit, and why was it called that, and who was in the skit? Some part of that answer. Come up with something. I know even Paul Sullivan even knows what it is.
I do. I know who wrote.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know the original one.
I have no idea. So callers,
yeah. I think
when
so,
you
yeah.
call in, yeah. don't say the answer because I don't know it.
I'll give you a little hint. You can. It's the second paragraph now. Hang on. Let's see. We'll put some microphone on.
I know exactly what you're talking about, and I can see it in my head.
Yeah.
But unless I go to that Google, I'm not going to come up with the names.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was sort of that, but it was based on. It was based on that.
Well, I think the song came from the skit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think, yeah. yeah we're yeah. chicken and egg in here.
Yeah.
But,
somewhat.
Yeah. yeah.
But anyway, so there's our question, and I know it's confusing, and we did the best we could with it. But and also, just to let you know, John, Tom, and Mike, your tickets will go out sometime this week for the auto show. I have plenty of time, so I can goof off a little bit because the auto show isn't until after the first year. But you will get the tickets. And all the other tickets that people have won over time, I have sent them out, so you should all have them. I was behind one today. I haven't driven it, the new Subaru Ascent. It was actually a loaner car from a Subaru dealership. And what makes the Ascent is a big car. And what makes it particularly interesting is it has a 2.4-liter direct injection turbocharged engine, and it produces 260 horsepower. That's quite a bit. That's quite a bit of horsepower for a Subaru. And they show it pulling an Airstream trailer, which is a pretty easy trailer to pull. So pretty interesting. And the other thing is the other interesting thing from Subaru. Subaru had a hybrid, the Crosstrek hybrid, which did not go over very well because it was pretty expensive and it really didn't do a whole lot for fuel economy. But now they are teaming up with Toyota with a plug-in hybrid, and the Crosstrek hybrid, the brand's first plug-in hybrid, will combine Toyota's hybrid system with Subaru's four-cylinder direct injection engine. So they're taking the best of the Toyota system and kind of mixing it all together and see what happens. Is that in order?
Yes.
Do people sound confident?
Yes.
All right.
I don't sound confident.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, let's see what let's
people
see
always sound confident.
Do they?
Though.
All right. Well, let's. I think it's an easy question if you grew up in a certain era. Well, let's try Kevin and Salem. Kevin?
Yep, here I am.
All right. So what do you think?
Well, I think it was Sammy Davis Jr. Here come the judge.
You got to say it one more time. I think you have to say it three times.
Here come the judge. And he's wearing black robes, and I think he might have had one of those old British-style white wigs. I'm not sure about that, but it's definitely Sammy Davis Jr. and Ron Amon's laughing.
Yeah, and that's what, according to this article, it says the 1969 GTO was named the judge after a popular skit called Here Comes the Judge, made famous by Sammy Davis Jr. on the popular comedy television show Rowan and Martin's Laughing. The judge was a slightly restyled version of the 1968, but it had the blacked out grill, the judge fender decals, and that skit was actually made, Sammy Davis Jr. made that famous from someone else. So it was, but Google has the answer, but you also had the answer, Kevin. So we'll put you back on hold. Dennis will take down your name and address, and we will send you out Tom Gotch's book.
Well, you know, that did not come from TV Land reruns. I have to admit that I was there for the original broadcast back in 68.
Well, you know, if you told me you were in the studio, Beverly Hills or wherever, where Burbank or wherever they did it, but yeah, I was kind of there for it too.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, stay right there. All right, so our answer. It was Sammy Davis Jr. And it was in Rowan and Martin. And Rowan and Martin's Laughing had a lot of contemporary stars at the time. And
what's your last name?
As I recall, even presidents. I think Nixon was on the show at the time. So so we will send out this beautiful book, the complete book of the Pontiac GTO, Every Model Since 1964, from Tom Glatch. That's what I usually try to do when I get books in the mail. I try to, if possible.
Because you don't read.
If possible. Interview the authors, and if I can't interview the authors, the least I can do is talk about the book and then give it away. And yeah, I'm not a big reader. I'm a big look at the pictures kind of guy, but it makes it sort of interesting. So congratulations to Kevin from Salem, New Hampshire, by the way. So thank you, Kevin, for listening to the program. And
yeah,
and coming up at the
plug my podcast.
the podcast is my podcast site is johnfpaul.podomatic.com. So johnfpaul.podomatic.com. It's also on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, FM Player. There's a whole bunch of other places that you can find the podcast. And there's a secondary podcast site because there's a site called Podcasts, PODCASTS, and that's actually got free store. It's actually better than the one I pay for, but I'm concerned it's going to go out of business anytime because how can they keep a podcast site going without charging people for it? But it's podcast.com, and then you have to search for it. I don't own a name on it. Where, like the other ones, I actually own my name, johnfpaul.podomatic.com. And my website, johnknowscars.net, is dead.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, well, it was like $100 every couple of years. Remember, I'm cheap. I did it because my IT team created it for me. And if you remember the story, my IT team was a group of juniors in high school. And they were at the Votech at South Shore Votech School, and it was a team of four kids, and they created a website for me through a website company called Wix. I, in turn, registered the website under my own name after they created it. But between owning the name and paying Wix and all of that, I decided it was too much money. I could spend that somewhere else and just the way it is. So, this is a kind of an interesting story. Suppose you thought you won $134,000 in a casino drawing, but the dealership involved in the competition refused to turn over the keys. And to make matters worse, you still get hit with the possible tax liability based on the vehicle's value. Well, that's what happened to Marita. A gambler at the Tri-Track Aston Martin of San Diego and contest organizer, the casino resort, which is owned by the, I can't even pronounce the name of this tribe, Kumeyaay. Any guesses? Kumeyaay. I don't know. But anyway. She was disqualified because she disobeyed the rules for the competition. Last month, the U.S. District Attorney in Southern California declined to dismiss the suit against the store and the salesman on procedural grounds, but their lawyer said he'll ask for it to be tossed out as baseless. According to this, they failed to identify evidence that supports her fraud claim against the casino and the dealership. Seems like if you want it, you want it. She admitted that in a recent deposition that the dealership and the casino employees made no statements to her, let alone any fraudulent statements. The casino wasn't sued because the tribal ownership protects it from liability. They say the casino reversed its mistaken issuance of the 1099 tax form, so she shouldn't assume any tax liability. Sounds like a lot of shenanigans going on here. She said she spent a large amount of money playing various slot machines. Doing so, she thought would increase her odds of car winning. When her name was drawn, she was publicly congratulated and posed for promotional photos. I think if you're posed for promotional photos and you're publicly congratulated, you won. She claims she was then escorted into a back room and subjected to high-pressure sales pitch in an effort to persuade her to forego her entitlement to the car and accept a minimal cash payment. I don't know. It sounds like a bunch of shenanigans to me. I don't know. Let's talk to Rick in Boston. Rick?
Hey there.
Hey there.
Well, this goes along with your cheap show.
All right.
Today. I was given a packet of information yesterday on veterans benefits and that, you know, discounts in that.
Mm-hmm.
And here's some of the auto stores that will give a discount for vets. Quite often they ask for a valid military ID.
Yep.
AutoZone, Auto Parts, Advanced Auto Parts, Firestone Auto Centers, Jiffy Lube, Meineke, Midas, Napa, Pep Boys.
Wow. And also, well, and also, if you're not working on your car and you're working on your house, Lowe's, right?
Oh, yeah. And that I just hit the auto ones in that.
Yeah.
If you'd like, it's about, lists about 250 different places.
Wow.
From restaurants to, I can make a copy and send you.
Yeah. Don't send it regular mail, though, because you know how the mail goes here.
Well, I think it's on the receiving end where the problem lies, not in the...
I don't think it's in the mail. I don't think it's in the U.S. Post Office. You're right. I think it's the other way. But if you want to send it to my work, and then what I can do is I can post it on Facebook and other social media and stuff, too, so we can let people know where they can get discounts. When I was in Florida earlier in the week, I went to the local Lowe's, and I bought a bunch of stuff, and the guy behind the counter said, because I spent about $450, and he goes, you're not a veteran, are you? And I said, no, they wouldn't take me. And he said, you know, you could save 10%. I said, no. I said, maybe the guy next to it will buy it for me. And I couldn't get the guy next to it to pay for it. So, but anyway, no, there are some veterans benefits. You're absolutely right. If you took, if you were a veteran, take advantage of all the benefits you can get. And no, send them my way. That'd be great.
No, I have a valid military ID, so I do take advantage whenever I can.
No, it makes sense. My sister-in-law's husband does the same thing. So, yep. Absolutely makes sense. Hey, okay, thanks, Rick.
Bye.
All right, we need to take another break, pay some bills. We'll do that. And before we know it, Paul Sullivan will be right there, rolling back to his microphone. My name's John Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program. You're listening on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston. And welcome back to the Car Doctor Program. We were just talking in between the break there that I've been asked to come up with five albums that if I was stuck on a desert island, what would be the five albums I would want to bring with me? And I kept thinking it had something to do with dessert. I was like, a dessert? A dessert island? That's even better, an island full of desserts. But no, desert island. And I'm not a music person, but I was kind of looking at the CDs that we own in our house.
Which one?
And there was a little bit of country. There was an Irish CD. There was actually the soundtrack from Pirate Radio, which actually has a lot of interesting music in it. I like the variety. Leon Russell, kind of like Leon Russell. So there's a little bit. No, you don't have to, but you know Dennis is a rock guy, so Metallica and
yeah, I came up with two off the top of my head, but
yeah.
the other three would be tough. Like I know I would without a doubt I would need Metallica's Master of Puppets. I can't go more than a couple months without listening to that album. So
is that Metallica?
And this is a controversial one because a lot of people don't like the band, but I like them. Queensryche Operation Mindcrime was a great album to tell a story, and it's a great album sonically and just melodically and just fantastic.
Okay, all right. Okay, well. And I got nothing, so And Paul Sullivan came up with some.
Yeah, and I come up with more since you were vamping here, and I could think of a little more. There's a CD called, we play a lot of, the, obviously, all the tracks, because I think we made them all famous, but the greatest Irish CD ever. I take that around.
All right.
Then I told you Gordon Lightfoot's greatest hits.
Which I think is a really good choice.
Yep, volumes one and two. That counts as one or two. That counts as two. All right. Ray Conniff's Christmas album. I think everyone needs to have that, don't they?
If I'm on a desert island, I don't think I want a Christmas
album. Well, if you're there long enough, it's going to be Christmas time.
I know. So, and as you pointed out, how do you play these records?
Right. You have to take the professor from Gilligan's Island.
The guy could build a nuclear reactor out of coconuts, but couldn't fix a hole in the boat. But the other thing is, this, we're way off topic here, but there's something called, which always happens at the end of the show, there's something called the Museum of Sound.
Yeah.
So sort of where they save things like, you know, the...
Where is it? In Washington?
Yeah. And it's sort of like, you know.
I've never been there.
I don't know.
I got to go next time.
But there's you know, where they save things like, you know, when the first moon landing, you know, the giant step from, you know, that thing. And, you know, a quote from The Wizard of Oz. And they were trying to figure out what to save it on, what medium to save it on.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you could save it on an 8-track, but, well, there's no 8-track players.
Right.
Or you could save it on a CD, but... In 1,000 years, what's the CD's a shiny thing?
You can save it on a cassette like over there, but it's all twisted.
That's
right. You can't play it anymore.
So what did they save all this music on?
The cloud.
Records.
Really?
Yeah. Now, the records are made out of, like, titanium or something. Yeah. So they don't, so that nothing happens to them. But the thought was that in 1,000,000 years, if you had a record, you know, if you had a cone and a needle and a rock, but you could spin the record and you could have sound come out of it.
But how would you know that?
Because in 1,000,000 years, people are going to be wicked smart.
Are they still going to be eating lobster?
I don't know.
Because I don't know how that started. I really don't. You know, I just tie this up and bring it all back. My fifth one would be The Cars' Greatest Hits.
There you go.
So well, I'm dropping the mic. Bye.
Well, you can't go yet because we have to talk about the Irish Hit Parade.
The Irish Hit Parade. So, November 17th. It's getting to be a lot like
Thanksgiving.
Christmas.
Yeah. So.
Well, one of the stations already, I guess, maybe more than one, but... The one I was listening to on the way in is already 100% Christmas.
Satellite radio has
three
Christmas ones.
Jingle Bells, and, something or
and,
other.
And one Spanish one.
Right. Yeah.
So there's one Spanish
Hallmark one.
And the only reason I know it's the Spanish Christmas one because, well, it sounds like Christmas music and it has Navidad in the title of it somewhere. So
the crazy thing about it is I'm not against Christmas music. In fact, I kind of like it.
Yeah.
But... They play the same 12 songs. You know how many people recorded Christmas albums and Christmas music? I want deep cuts. I want one I haven't heard ever before. I want deep Christmas cuts.
A deep
Maybe that's
cut
my
of
podcast,
Jingle Bells
Danny.
From...
There you go.
Yeah,
there
is my go. Podcast.
I don't know. Yeah, from Metallica.
Right.
There we go.
Everyone recorded a Christmas album.
You know, as I recall, I for Christmas, I put together a whole group of Christmas songs that have cars in them.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
Which are not all that widely listened to, surprisingly enough.
Well, wait, the Beach Boys made a fortune on their.
They did. They did.
Saint
that's
Nick.
That's in there, but yeah.
Okay.
Beach Boys made a fortune on everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, the piano guy's playing.
Zach Cantor.
Yeah. Just so you know.
Is that Nat King Cole, by the way? We didn't determine that.
We never really fully determined that. But coming up next,
Paul, help us out.
Coming up next, Paul Sullivan and the Irish Hit Parade, the very best in Irish music heard here every weekend on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston, 100.3 FM, or on the WROL app. You can listen anywhere in the world. Till next week, make sure you wear your seatbelt, drive safely, and be good to your car. Talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.